welcome to Unjustly Maligned, the show for people who go against the grain. We seek to rehabilitate overlooked, ignored, derided, and just plain hated contributions to pop culture. Movies, novels, music, comic books, video games, whatever. If everyone hates it, we'll find someone who loves it and let them explain why you should too. I'm your host, Anthony Johnston, and my guest today is a woman who spends her days as a retailer at Fantastic Comics, one of America's premier indie stores, and is an admin of the LCS Valkyries group, a band of female retailers at the forefront of gender and LGBT equality issues in comics. She's also currently taking a degree in women's studies, which I'm fairly sure will have at least some bearing on today's subject. So, welcome to the show, Juliet Capra.
Thank you.
Now, let's get straight to it, because I do feel that your perspective, especially on women's issues and stuff, is going to have a bearing on this, and I want to hear about that. So tell us what you've chosen, and then give us some context around its, well, in this case, its production, because I know that that's a story in and of itself, and its release, its reception upon release, why it is maligned, and why you think that that is wrong.
So the thing I've chosen is the 1995 movie Cutthroat Island, which is a big swashbuckling pirate adventure with Geena Davis as a pirate captain and hidden treasure and shipboard battles. And it also is one of the biggest Hollywood flops of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's all those things. I adore this movie, and it, I think, was actually justly maligned. It's not a great movie. It's got some pretty stilted acting, some pretty terrible dialogue, and I love it all the same. When it had a pretty rocky production. Geena Davis was married to the director at the time, and it kind of sounds like there was a little bit of arm twisting involved in this movie, and they spent massive amounts of money on shooting on locations and building these really exciting set pieces, some of which had to be rebuilt partway through, and they changed stars a few times, co-stars, I should say, and it was just a really ill-fated production, and they lost millions of dollars on it.
To the point where the studio that made it, Carolco, actually went bankrupt.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. This is one of the, I think, one of the last movies to win the the Guinness Book of World Records award for the biggest Hollywood flop or the biggest film flop. They stopped giving that award, probably for good reason, stopped giving that award not long after this movie. So, yeah.
Maybe they looked at it and figured that nothing would ever beat it again. Although I gather that actually there are movies, there have been movies since that have been bigger flops in terms of the disparity between budget and income. But yeah, this was an enormous flop at the time. I mean, I'd never seen this movie, and I knew very little about it other than that it was, yes, a Geena Davis starring pirate movie, that she was married to the director, that it was a cost an enormous amount of money, was a huge flop, and was beset by production problems because they went to the expense of things like actually building real ships.
Yes, they did.
And filming in the ocean rather than in water tanks and stuff. I mean, but to its credit,
they did water tanks as well, but
But to its credit, you can see that.
It's beautiful.
Because this is before the days of ubiquitous where CGI could, you know, replicate just about anything you like. And there are many, many shots in this which are clearly not matte paintings, and they are actual, you know, overhead helicopter shots or whatever of galleons at sea. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Probably one of the last movies to do that sort of thing.
They did some of that for the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
Right.
Not for the entirety. I think they had three ships, two or three ships that they had the complete ship. And they filmed around it actually at sea, but not for the whole thing, certainly.
Right. But it was seen very much as, well, the public perception, because it got absolutely slammed by critics ahead of release. And the public perception was that it was kind of a vanity project, which, having read a little more now about the production, I don't think is really fair. Everybody seemed to seize on the fact that it was Rennie Harlin and Geena Davis, and they were married at the time, and that, oh, therefore, it's just an ego thing. They're spending hundreds of million, well, tens of millions of dollars at the time, to make this movie just to satisfy their own egos. But actually, that wasn't the case at all, really, was it?
No, I don't think so. I think they were trying to make an exciting, fun movie. I think they were trying to establish Gina Davis as an action star, and I think it was sort of a best intentions kind of situation with this one.
Yeah. I have to say, I like Gina Davis in general. Mm-hmm. I really like her, like these days, right now, outside of her acting and stuff, with all the foundation that she established for gender in media.
Yes.
And being an Olympic archery team semi-finalist, I think it was.
Yep.
What the hell?
Gina Davis is great.
She is pretty awesome. And she did that massive research project, or she funded anyway, that research project about gender in children's entertainment.
Yes.
Which was really eye-opening because it was the first, or certainly the first big widespread one that had been done. And I won't say she did it in secret, but it didn't really get much publicity until she actually said, okay, we're finished now, and here are the results. And suddenly it caused a massive splash because everybody's like, wait, Gina Davis did this?
yeah.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes, actually, because I mean, nothing to do with this movie, but it's just a really interesting study that people should read. But she, I'll say up front, I thought this movie was merely okay. I don't think it really deserved the slating that it got. But on the other hand, it is not as entertaining as the first, anyway, Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and not even as entertaining as many sort of action movies from the 90s. But I thought, and this probably puts me in opposition to a lot of the critics, I actually thought Gina Davis was one of the highlights of it. I thought she made a really convincing action star.
Oh, yeah.
Partly because she's really statuesque.
Well, and she did all of her own stunts, so there's a level of believability to the character.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Every stunt. All of that is her.
I'm in favor of exercise, but you owe me an explanation.
Come here. Come on. We have to climb down here. Fast!
Is that fast enough?
Come on!
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see some of it. There's a couple of things where she's like, you know, falling down things and stuff, and you can see that it's clearly her. But all of it, even like sort of leaping out of the window onto the carriage below and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, that particular clip was actually used. That is probably my favorite part of the movie. And that particular clip was used for a lot of the promotional interviews at the time because it's a really cool stunt and it's very clearly her. If you look at it if you look at it specifically to look at the clip instead of letting the movie carry you along, you realize that it is a single shot of her rolling out of the window, down the roof, landing on the carriage, and then the carriage comes up to the camera, and you can see it's very clearly her.
Oh.
It's really good.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that was a single shot. So there's no cuts, no edits in that at all?
I think it's a single shot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and if you're doing your own stunts, then why not? You'd do that as a single shot, wouldn't you, just to prove it?
Yeah, and apparently, I don't know how much belief to put into this, but apparently her husband, the director, was convinced her to do all of her own stunts, and she wasn't super into it. And he made up some story about working with Sylvester Stallone and how Stallone had done all of his own stunts. And then the safety people told her after the fact that wasn't the case. And he had just told her that because he wanted her to do everything.
Wow.
So, you know.
Well, but it looks great as a result. As I say, she is, I think, really convincing. And of course, straight after this, they made, and I'm guessing they probably would have been in the process of making it while they were releasing this, The Long Kiss Goodnight, which is also directed by Renny Harlin. And, you know, again, stars her as an action heroine. And again, she is very convincing as an action heroine.
Absolutely.
So clearly this was a thing for him.
Yeah, and for her. Yeah, she's wonderful in this, and she has this there's this great look to her specifically in the final action sequence, the fight on the ships. She looks straight out of the etchings of Anne Bonny and Mary Read.
Oh yeah,
or the two historical pirates. She looks just like them, which is was really exciting for me because I was deep in a historical pirate research phase when this movie came out.
Oh really? Oh okay. So you were just in the right place at the right time.
Oh yes, I was 9 when this movie came out.
Oh, you make me feel so old.
You're welcome. Yeah, I was 9 when it came out, and it was. I think I was nearing the end of 6 years of intense pirate fandom.
Wow.
My fan history started with musical theater and then went to Peter Pan via the Mary Martin musical. And then from Peter Pan transitioned into pirates, and that really stuck. And I was the little kid on the playground who would make my friends play pirates, but they would have to play specific historical pirates. And
not good enough to just play pirates. You've got to be specific pirate.
You have to be real pirates, and I would provide a list of characters that they could be. Very controlling playtime.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Anne Bonny and Mary Read were always in there. Grace O'Malley was always in there. Ching Shu was always in there. She's the coolest. And when this movie came out, it was the first time I had ever seen a female pirate captain. After years of drawing them and writing my own stories about them and reading about them in history or sometimes pseudo-history, it was my first time seeing someone like this on screen, and it had a huge impact. It was, Gina Davis in this movie was kind of the embodiment of all of my wishes for a character at the time.
She is pretty awesome, and she looks, you're absolutely right about the final sequence. I sort of highlighted that myself, as in that final action sequence she looks amazing.
Yeah, I would not want to go up against her.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. With the long hair and the white billowing blouse, mm-hmm. and the long boots. I mean, she looks amazing. Yeah. on in many ways, but she does look imposing and like somebody who is used to strutting around and giving orders.
Mm-hmm. And she looks like someone who, obviously she's got that Hollywood beautiful thing happening, but she looks like someone who is outside doing things. That was one of my big disappointments for the third in the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. I really wanted Keira Knightley's character to become a pirate. She does in the script, she does in the story, but visually they never took her out of the beautiful kind of fresh-faced female lead role.
Right, she never adopts the trappings,
Yeah, and as a result, she gives this big speech at the end of those films, and it fell completely flat to me because she didn't look like a pirate. And she especially didn't look like a pirate when I had the standard of Gina Davis as Morgan in my head. So there has not been a female pirate since who, in my mind, stands up to this character.
Something that I noticed during the movie, within 10 minutes, probably less than 10 minutes, actually, she gets beaten and bloody. And then she carries the scars for ages, and she gets beaten and bloody again later in the movie. And there are a lot of movies where a character like this would have, they get into a fight, they get a punch, they bleed from the mouth a little, and then 5 minutes later they look absolutely perfect and fresh-faced again. And her character is not like that at all throughout this. She looks like a woman carrying scars and bruises and injuries.
Yes, absolutely. She is so... I mean, it's not just that she's the knowledge that she's doing her own stunts. She seems in it, and there's a level of believability because of that choice. And it's also it's a rare choice for action stars in general, but it's a very rare choice for female leads.
Yes.
To carry injuries throughout a movie and to have dirt on them. and yes. to have injured, you know, to have their, you know, not just their clothes messed up, but to have their bodies bear the evidence of the action.
Yes, although I must say I was quite impressed at how lustrous and shiny her hair managed to remain throughout the movie, despite the fact that I'm sure most of it is probably extensions.
Oh, probably.
Because it's awful.
Very likely.
It's right down to the small of her back in some scenes. And I'm like, yeah probably not.
Although, that's another thing is that my hair at the time did that very much. And it was really exciting for me.
Well, listeners won't get this, but I mean, I know you. And
right.
I must admit, when I saw her hair in this movie, I did immediately think,
Yep.
Because it's not entirely dissimilar.
No, absolutely not. I mean, mine's cut off right now for the first time in many, many years. But at the time, it was down, you know, down my back and big and curly and kind of bushy and poofy and did all of those things that her hair does. It was great for all of my pirate dress-up games. It was perfect.
You talked about historical female pirate captains, mm-hmm. and that is something that gets overlooked quite
yes.
a lot. And not just pirate captains, it's, you know, sort of female cowboys, if you'll pardon the mm-hmm. misnomer, females in the military, even in, you know, medieval times and certainly in post-medieval times. It is something that is often overlooked, and as a result, people have a hard time believing it when they see it in stories, and they think that
yes.
it's historically anachronistic, when in fact it's not at all, is it?
Well, it wasn't, I wouldn't say that it was, I mean, particularly with pirates, I wouldn't say that it was common, but it certainly did happen. There are more examples of female pirates than female pirate captains, although the ones who we do know about were pretty spectacular. I mean, the most, by any measure, except maybe notoriety currently, the most successful pirate in history was a woman.
Oh, and, really? Who was that?
Qing Shi. She was a Chinese pirate in the kind of first half of the 19th century, mostly. And she terrorized coastlines, and the, the Chinese government tried to stop her, and navies from Britain and from Portugal tried to stop her and completely failed, and she wound up captaining a fleet with between 20,000 and 80,000 people in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it depends on what source you look at, but, you know, the lower end is 20,000.
Right,
so
right.
That's something.
Even that's pretty impressive.
It's pretty big. And she, amazingly, she... you know, she had an active career. She terrorized the seas, and she ran villages along coastlines. And then when she was done, she negotiated a pardon and retired and lived until she was 80.
Wow.
Which is unheard of. Pirates did not do that.
I was just going to say, the very fact that she lived that long is amazing.
Yes, absolutely. So she's, by any measure, she is the most successful pirate in history, but people still have this idea that women pirates are not a thing.
Right. Well, and you said that obviously there were more pirates than pirate captains, but there were just generally more pirates than pirate captains. So I think that's
very true. You
know, understandable. There was one, I mean, this is, again, unrelated to the movie, but I find it interesting. There was something that somebody on Twitter, and forgive me, I don't recall who, but somebody clipped out a screenshot from Wikipedia about sort of women pirates mm-hmm. or... I assume it was just French history, actually. And I'll just read it out here. 1343, Olivier de Clisson is found guilty of treason and beheaded at Les Halles in Paris. As a result, his wife, Jean de Clisson, sold their holding, bought a fleet of ships, and took to the sea as a pirate to seek revenge against King Philip VI of France and the nobility. Now that,
I mean, pretty cool, right?
That's pretty cool. Why isn't there a movie of that?
I don't know. There should be stories about all of these women. I mean, if you probably the two most famous women pirates are Anne Bonny and Mary Read, and they have a story that is so perfect to be a movie or a miniseries or something, because these were two women who independently both decided for different reasons to dress in drag and become pirates and wound up on the same ship. And then had a sort of a poly relationship with the captain of that ship, Calico Jack Rackham, who was called Calico Jack because of his sartorial choices, which I think is delightful. And the three of them had this relationship, and they sailed and they fought and they were successful, and eventually they were captured. And when they were captured, both women were pregnant, and I never remember which one's which, but one of them was executed and the other one disappeared and no one knows what happened.
Wow.
And you can read transcripts of their trial, and it's amazing. And it's, you know, everything about that story feels like it should probably be a movie.
Right, like it would lend itself very well to being fictionalized, yeah.
Absolutely. And it has been in a few cases. You know, there are some novels about them. There's actually a children's, there's a very young adult novel about them.
I'll bet that leaves out the poly relationship.
Yes, I think so. I think probably. Some of them show up on this TV show, Black Sails, which I am not a huge fan of.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's beautiful and it's epic, but it's also super rapey. I decided not to watch it after that. So they should be. And actually, Ching Shi is going to be in a movie, apparently, called Red Flag, which is maybe going to start production soon. I'm not sure. But okay. It's disappointing because she, you know, she's a Chinese pirate, and she was sailing around China, and they have decided to have a Portuguese love interest character, like POV character for her, which is kind of, you know, this is one where we don't need extra white people.
Right, right. Yeah.
Leave them out. They're not really important to this story.
Just once. Speaking of, okay, getting back to the movie.
Right, yes, the movie at hand.
I did very much appreciate, actually, that at no point that I recall, anyway, during the movie, was Morgan's gender an issue.
Absolutely. That is one of my favorite things about this film.
Yeah, some of the antagonists doubted her and underestimated her because she was a woman, which you'd expect. But there was, as I recall, there was nothing in her actions that indicated that she was less capable than any of the men. And, you know, even for 95, 96, whenever this was released, that was pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I rewatched this even before planning to do the podcast. I rewatched this and I hadn't realized that her gender is not a stumbling block. I mean, I would have expected at least one of those sort of heavy-handed scenes that happens frequently, with someone saying, well, you can't be a captain because you're a woman, and then she proves them wrong. But that never happens. And even the times that she is questioned because of her gender, it's usually, you know, her uncles. And it's kind of gender and age and a number of things.
Right.
And nobody ever mentions it being strange that she's a woman and a pirate. It's not a problem. And she doesn't, this is why actually the scene where she does the stunt out of the window is my favorite scene in the film. Because in that moment, they're being chased through Port Royal, and she has to, of course, jump off of a moving carriage up and go up into a building.
Oh, wait, does she do the jump off of the carriage as well?
Well, I can't remember if she jumps off, but whatever Morgan does,
no, she
Gina
does. The carriage goes through an archway, and it's got a terracotta slanted roof leading
up
to it.
Yes,
and she's on top of it, fighting a couple of the British colonist Navy people. And she sort of just turns around, and as it goes under the archway, she leaps onto the tiles.
Yes, she does, and then she runs through a shop, which is I don't know exactly what it is, but it's a shop full of women trying on makeup and lacy things and you know, pretty dresses and jewelry. And she literally runs through a cloud of makeup to get out of it. And then she does her, you know, very impressive roll down the roof and onto the moving carriage. And then she says this line.
Excuse me.
And that line is so great for me. I mean, it's a really awkward, heavy-handed,
it's cheesy,
stilted.
Right, yeah.
It's so cheesy. But the fact that she spends this entire movie being a super badass fighter and, you know, a really cool, active pirate, but also is very excited about this room full of lace and ruffles.
Yes.
That was a really big deal to me, both as a child and then watching it again as an adult, realizing that it gives her character. I mean, it could be seen as sort of a stereotype, but it gives her character levels that I think are really impressive.
It gives her some depth, absolutely. She's not just, she's not like Hannah. You know, the
yeah.
movie with, she's not that kind of, I have a single purpose and I'm basically just going to be a man wearing women's clothes. Because
absolutely.
Let's face it, a lot of female action characters are basically just kind of male characters wearing women's clothing, essentially.
Sometimes, yeah, that does happen. And I do love that she transitions from dresses to pants regularly.
Yes.
In this, and it's not even a mentioned moment. It just happens.
Yeah, no, you're right. And as you said, nobody at any point questions her competence to do anything because she's a woman. They question it sometimes because of her age or, yeah, naivety or whatever. But nobody ever, yeah, says, well, you can't do this because you're a woman,
mm-hmm.
which is great to see. Yeah, as I say, even for a relatively late year like 1996, that was still pretty rare.
Yes.
However, the movie wasn't marketed much at all because Carolco went under and apparently the
yeah.
distributors just kind of didn't care about it. But what marketing there was, and I remember this distinctly because I'm rather older than you. I remember this movie coming out and, you know, being advertised at the time. And it was marketed as a sort of lighthearted, romantic caper pirate movie. And then of course you read the reviews and the criticisms, and people say that there's no chemistry between her and Matthew Modine. And that's true. I mean, there is no chemistry. It's a bad mismatch in those terms. But at the same time, I didn't really get any impression through the movie that it was trying to be a sort of romantic caper. They only have two kisses. And only one of them is actually genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other one is because she's trying to basically persuade him to do something. And as soon as she realizes he can't, she goes, oh, well, sod you then.
Yep.
Claps him back in irons. You know, she makes it quite clear that she doesn't need a man. Not that she's misandrist, not that she's not attracted to him, but she literally does not need him. And I think if they hadn't pushed that angle, and if you kind of just go into this thinking of it as a solo vehicle about the character Morgan and with Shaw just being her sidekick rather than an equal two-hander romantic thing, I think the movie comes off a lot better.
Well, and that's very much how I went into it the first time I saw it, because, you know, my parents had been listening to me babble on about pirates for years. And so it was presented to me as, this is a movie about a woman who is a pirate, not a romance, and it's in a pirate setting. That was not at all how I, this is not how I've ever watched this movie. And it always seemed like a surprise to me that on the poster, or, you know, back when I had it, the cover of my VHS copy, it always seemed weird that the promotional art shows the two of them and shows Matthew Modine's character even a little bit higher up and a little bit more prominently. It just seemed like it was weird. It didn't make any sense. I mean, it makes sense as an adult now, and I remember that there's a thing called sexism. now I understand. But you know, and as, in terms of the chemistry, I don't feel like there needs to be much chemistry between them, because this is clearly not an epic romance that is going to last forever. She's using him. She's, you know, if he's useful for finding the treasure, great. If he's useful as a fun sexual partner, also great.
Right. I mean, even at the end, she effectively says, come up and see me sometime. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, this is not the beginning of, an, as you say, a romance for the ages.
No, absolutely. And even if he stays with her crew I don't get the, I don't imagine that this is a long-lasting affair at all.
Right, not the sort of thing that she's going to lose sleep over. That, again, that's the impression I got, a good impression that I got from the character was that, yes, she's attracted to him, but if for some reason that attraction was not reciprocated, she's not going to lose any sleep over it.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And I love that she's, you know, a character who very much owns her sexuality and uses it and doesn't seem to care
right.
what people think, which is, it's great. It's refreshing now, even. It is refreshing.
Right. Well, and I did wonder if, and this is impossible to say, obviously, but I did wonder if this is one of those movies that was not so much ahead of its time, but just if it had been released 10, 15 years later, may have been much better received. Purely because of that, if they'd actually marketed it as this is a kick-ass female pirate character who's pretty cool and does some great stuff and, you know, gets her revenge and captains a pirate ship and blah, if they'd actually pushed it in that way and 10 or 15 years later, I mean, if they tried to do that in the 90s, I understand why they didn't, because if they tried to do that in the 90s, it almost certainly would have, well, it bombed anyway, but it wouldn't have helped right. it, put it like that. But if they'd done that in the 2000s, maybe it would have been better received. Maybe the audience would have been more receptive to a movie presented in that way. I think it's a great shame in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps. It doesn't make up for the other flaws that are very clearly in the movie. You know, there's really, really uneven character development and performances don't mesh sometimes and the dialogue is pretty, pretty corny. And there's some really, really ham-bone delivery, moments of ham-bone delivery. But honestly, I don't, I say this a lot. I don't think pirate movies should be good movies because I think to make a good movie about that era in the golden age of piracy and life at sea, it has to be pretty dark. It has to be serious. These are, and you would have to acknowledge that these are terrible people you're watching.
Right, they are not heroes, yeah.
No, and that is not what pirate movies are for. Pirate movies are for swashbuckling and pirate archetypal characters. They're about having fun and watching action. I mean, I am a person who is more than most of my friends, very sensitive to violence in movies, and it really bothers me. But if you put it on two tall ships, I don't care. Do whatever. I don't care anymore. And so I don't think pirate movies need to be exciting and serious. I mean, there was that what was that Roman Polanski movie called? The Buccaneer, maybe? Something along those lines. And that was supposed to be a gritty, serious pirate movie, and it was all right, but it, you know, it wasn't, for me, it was not as good as, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean or any number of Errol Flynn movies or The Crimson Pirate. You know, there are a lot of pirate movies that are better than that because they don't try to be serious.
Right. That movie was actually just called Pirates.
Oh, just called Pirates.
Yeah,
all right.
And it came out exactly 10 years before Cutthroat Island. I've never seen it.
It's all right.
Starring Walter Matthau.
Yeah, I think it starts with Walter Matthau and somebody else on a raft, sort of in the middle of the ocean after presumably a shipwreck, and there might be some cannibalism or something.
As you do.
But, you know, sometimes it happens.
Speaking of big battles and carnage, I mean, the last 20, 25 minutes of the movie, that was something, this is not a short movie, and we got to, there was only an hour left, and they'd found the treasure. And I'm like, okay, what are they going to do for the next hour? And then it turns out that what they're going to do is spend about 25 minutes having a massive sea battle.
Yes, yes, and I'd love it.
On command!
Our parts!
Cannon forward! Cannon's ready!
Cannon's ready!
Guns forward!
Guns forward!
Open fire!
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 Fire! Fire!
Hoist our colors!
I mean, again, you can tell these are actual ships in the water. I'm sure they're all rigged up and everything. But yeah, it was like, wow. It really sort of brought to mind those old style, you know, CinemaScope Hollywood epics sea battles and stuff. But it did suffer, I think, from, or at least the first half of this battle did suffer from the problem that it was sort of large scale and it contained so many people and so much cannon fodder that it was hard to actually get excited about it. This is where movies like Star Wars actually, for, you know, which I mean, I love them. I acknowledge they're not high cinema, but one of the things they get very right is that they have these huge battles, but in amongst them, intertwined amongst the big battles, there are always personal fights going on.
Yes.
Something directly involving the protagonists to keep the tension up, keep you on the edge of your seat. But the first half, anyway, of this one, there really wasn't that. It was just two ships firing cannons at one another and things exploding in the background. And it looked wonderful. It was amazing, but it dragged. I think that was a real issue because it brought to mind like wargamers pushing units around. Mm. You know, it kind of felt detached.
Objectively, I can see that. But this is where my pirate thing comes in. This is where my love of pirate movies and pirate epics and pirate stories and just pirate mythology kicks in, and I could not care less. I love every second of this. I will watch ship, you know, cannons being fired at between ships for hours if you put me in front of that. And I have. I mean, I've you know, the whole Horatio Hornblower series I have watched in a single sit-down marathon.
Wow.
I'm okay with that.
Wow.
That's a thing I will, you know, I'm Horatio Hornblower's a little bit different because it's not strictly a pirate story, but there are still tall ships, so it's okay.
Right. It's still the same time period. It's tall ships firing cannon at one another.
Yeah, yes.
It's basically the same thing.
Pretty much.
less cutlasses and you know, swashbuckling.
And honestly, it is that is probably a more realistic look at some elements of the golden age of piracy than pirate movies, because most pirates were deserters. Like Trotter at the end of this movie, you know, he's a very realistic character in that sense that he is he's a soldier and he is unhappy and he basically he has a boss who doesn't treat him very well. And at the end of the movie, he decides to become a pirate, which is how most pirates became pirates. They left their ships.
Right.
They left naval service.
Because how else are you going to get experience aboard a ship?
Exactly.
You know, a pirate crew is not going to take somebody on and train them. They want people who already know how to operate a tall ship. So.
Absolutely.
And he even says, I think, at the moment that he decides to defect, I think, doesn't he even say, no future for me in the Navy?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And the British Navy at the time was horrifying. I mean, they invented keel hauling. That's not a pirate invention. It often gets placed at the door of piracy, but you know, that was a naval punishment. So, you know, it's not a great place to be.
We do historically, sadly, have a capacity for great cruelty and torture and all that sort of thing.
Don't we all?
Well, speaking of the Navy, actually, one of the characters I did love was Patrick Malahide's character, the Commodore, Commander. I'm not sure exactly what his rank is, but the main bad guy, purely because of Patrick Malahide. Now, I don't know whether you know that actor, but he is a staple of British television and British movies, and has now, you know, sort of made a career also playing British villains, because aren't they always, in Hollywood movies. And he is such a beautifully understated actor.
Mm.
His delivery is always so wonderfully stereotypically British, but without ever going over the top. You know, he never chews the scenery. He's just beautifully understated, and he does exactly the same thing here as well. Even when that she steals his carriage at the start, he just comes out and goes,
"Mr. Trotter, my bloody carriage!"
Yes. Yeah, I think I've seen him I think I've seen him in a few things. He's been in a few other, or was in a few other pirate films as well, which I've seen most of.
Right.
But I think he was in an adaptation of Kidnapped around the same time that he was in Cutthroat Island.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which was one of my favorite books around the time that this movie came out.
He may
shockingly.
Well have, he may well have been in Hornblower at some point as well, actually. It really would not surprise me. He's very much a character actor who gets around, you know. But anyway, he's wonderful, yeah. I wonder on reflection if this was, I mean, you're right, it's not a great movie. There are corny bits, some of the acting is wooden, some of the character development, as you say, is very uneven. However, it is far and away better than many, many movies that have been much more successful, financially successful. And I do wonder if it is one of those cases where there was so much prejudgment about it being an ego movie, about the trouble production, about how much it had cost. You know, at the time, it was one of the most expensive movies ever made.
Yeah.
And people just went in with such literal prejudice that it coloured their perceptions. And then a few reviewers, didn't like it for whatever reason. And word spreads. And then before you know it, the common perception is that this is a bad movie and it's going to be a flop and you shouldn't see it. That always annoys and disappoints me. It's one of the reasons I do this show with any piece of work, not just movies. But I can speak to that personally because when this was it 1920? I was still living in Birmingham at the time. I was still a regular role player with my old school friends. And the reason I mentioned that is that we actually made a pirate game using the GURPS system. That we played quite a bit. We had a lot of fun with it. It was very, you know, buckle my swash and all that. It was very much, as you say, in the fictionalized pirate style rather than historical accuracy. And that was a lot of fun. And the same group of friends, we used to regularly go to the cinema, like at least once a week and sometimes twice, to see the latest big movie. Mm-hmm. As a result, God, we saw some clunkers. But even we did not go to see this movie at the time. And it was exactly because of that. It was because we had all heard in advance that it was a terrible movie that was going to be a flop and you shouldn't bother seeing. And so it was just cut off at the knees before it even had a chance to get anywhere.
Yeah, I also hate when that happens. And I tend to actively avoid reviews because I love a lot of movies that reviewers hate, especially, you know, I think recently reviewers have changed. Most reviewers have sort of changed their approach to sci-fi, fantasy, superhero movies, all of that business, which I have loved most of my life. But it used to be that reviews of those movies were pretty across the board terrible, regardless of the quality of the movie. So I very quickly decided to be a person who was not going to pay attention to reviews and who would kind of take something of your approach and, you know, find out that a movie was being terribly reviewed and see it anyway. And sometimes that comes back to me in a bad way. I did just go see Fantastic Four on purpose yesterday.
Oh, right.
That was maybe a poor choice. I would be interested to see if you could find someone to stand up for that movie. But I think it is very much one of the unfortunate things that happens with reviews in any medium is that if there's a number of reviewers who don't like it, people won't even try it. And with movies in particular that are so genre specific, I think you need someone who cares at least a little bit about that genre.
Right. You've already got one hurdle to cross with people in that, like, well, I don't like pirate movies. Okay, well, you know, you might like this one. So you've already got that hurdle to cross. And then compound that with lots of reviewers saying that, well, and even for a pirate movie, this isn't that great. You're just going to, you immediately diminish your potential audience. Funnily enough, Roger Ebert actually gave this a good review.
Oh, good for Roger Ebert. That's lovely.
Of all the people, everyone else trashed it and he actually gave it a good review.
Excellent.
He basically said the same as we, as like he I'll quote here, it's on Wikipedia. He said, this is in short a satisfactory movie. Mm. It doesn't transcend its genre, and it's not surprising or astonishing. I saw it because it was my job, and having seen it, I grant its skill and award it 3 out of 4 stars on that basis. But unless you're really into pirate movies, it's not a necessary film.
That is very, very accurate.
Yeah, I think that's entirely, that's probably one of the most fair reviews I've ever seen from Ebert.
Yeah, absolutely. I would wholeheartedly recommend this movie to someone who really enjoys pirate movies. I would not recommend it to any number of other people.
Right. But no, I agree with you. If you, and I do like a good pirate movie. As I say, I don't regret having watched this at all. I kind of...
Oh, good.
On reflection, I kind of wish I had seen it at the time now. Maybe I would have enjoyed it more. But at the same time, I am not going to go out and buy the Blu-ray or the box set, which, you know, the, or the special edition or whatever, which you probably have.
Do those actually exist? I did not have that.
I just assumed. I don't know.
I would be surprised if anyone would spend the money to release this movie, frankly.
Oh, okay.
I still have my VHS copy.
You still have it?
Oh, yeah, I've got it. It's kind of worn. The cover is kind of, you know, not great. In fact, it doesn't really look like the cover anymore. But yeah, I've got it in a box in my basement. I don't watch it, but I have it.
Right.
And if I watch it, I watch it streaming.
Right. So you can get it on streaming.
Yeah, you can watch it on Amazon.
Right. So do you even have a VHS player anymore?
Yes, Anthony, they're called VCRs.
Do you have a VCR?
I do.
Wow.
I do. It's not great, but you know, I've got a few movies that have not had official releases on DVD, and I've just never taken the time to transfer them.
I can sympathize a little with that. We didn't get rid of our VCR until we could replace a couple of movies like Tampopo, which is a Japanese movie that was not available on DVD for a long time. But by now, I don't think I actually know anybody in this country, at least, who actually owns a VCR anymore.
I don't know anyone in this country either.
Right. Oh, okay.
So it's just me.
Oh, okay.
Just me
so,
and my family.
Right, so it's not an American thing. It's just you.
No. I'm the weird one.
Okay.
Unfortunately, right now, the VCR is almost never used. And it, the last time I tried to put something in it, it was kind of
it didn't mangle it, did it?
No, it didn't. But it was kind of, it was just a little bit funky, and I don't know if there's anyone anymore who can fix it. So it might be the end of the VCR days for me, unfortunately.
It's a shame.
But but yeah, no, I'm sitting next to my movie collection right now, and I have a lot of tapes.
You will
next
have
to
get
me.
Your DVD of Cutthroat Island then. I mean, there may not
Absolutely.
Be a special edition, as you say, but certainly there's a DVD.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it must exist.
Oh no, it definitely does. The DVD exists, yeah.
Oh, good. Good. I have never looked it up, honestly, because I just kind of assumed, why would they?
It costs pennies to release, doesn't it, on DVD?
That's true.
Okay, this has been fascinating. And thank you for the impromptu history lesson on female pirates as well. That was very interesting.
Anytime.
But I agree with you. It's, if you love pirate movies, you should watch this, because it's nowhere near as terrible as people made out at the time. If you don't like pirate movies, then fair enough. You know, this isn't going to persuade you.
But if you love Gina Davis also.
Yes, that's true, actually. Yes, definitely if you're a Gina Davis fan, because it's a shame, actually, that this, as a result, has become a sort of overlooked role of hers. Because, yeah, she's great in it. And and as an action hero, is amazing.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I think if Gina Davis in this movie came out now, she would have been one of the people, I think she would have been one of the people on the list to play Wonder Woman or a character like that.
Yes.
I don't know that I would want to see Gina Davis as Wonder Woman, but I think she would have been put on the list.
Right. But a movie like this would have put her on that list. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
I think I agree with that. Yeah. Because she is certainly, as I say, she said at the start, she's statuesque in this role, especially. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Maybe she would have made a good Wonder Woman. Who knows? Anyway, so, Juliet, where can people find you if they like what you have to say?
You can find me on Twitter. ElusiveJ is my Twitter handle. Or if you want to see what I have to say about comics, I'm on Tumblr at elusivecomicsthoughts.tumblr.com.
Awesome. I've always wondered, why the elusive J? Where does that come from?
It's because I'm not reliable when I try to blog. I have attempted to start regular blogs a few times, and I have never managed to stick with a schedule. So I decided that my style of blogging would have to be, when I have an idea, I will put something on the internet. And that's where it came from. I'm hard to find if you want to find me regularly, apparently.
Thanks for listening to Unjustly Maligned. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, please check out my comics, books, and music. For example, if kick-ass female heroes who can stand toe-to-toe with any man send you all a quiver, you may enjoy my new series, Codename Babushka, a high-action spy thriller, which just launched this week. The first issue of Codename Babushka is available at your local comic or bookstore and at online retailers everywhere. Go to anthonyjohnston.com, where you'll find information and links to all of my work. Please also consider rating Unjustly Maligned on iTunes. It's the best way to spread the word about the show and is very much appreciated. Unjustly Maligned is a 7RQ production for The Incomparable and is made in England. You can find more information, links, and show notes at ump.fm. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Iconic. It for the wrong reasons, you know.
Yes.
Legendary for the wrong reasons. It's, you know, it's like Heaven's Gate or something. It's one of those movies that you feel you should watch just because it has such this mythos around it, about it being so bad and such a massive failure. And now, having watched it, yeah, I feel actually really bad for everybody involved, because I'm like, it really didn't deserve that treatment. No. It really is not that bad.
It's not. It's really not. And I'm glad that you didn't hate it. I imagine you're used to people saying this, but I felt a little bit guilty that you were going to be watching it. And also got a giggle out of the idea that you were going to be watching it.
Well, yeah, funnily enough, in one of the early episodes, Emma Vicelli said that she got a great laugh out of the knowledge that I was sitting there watching Italian cartoon theme tunes on YouTube. But it is part and parcel of the podcast. As I rapidly realized, I think it was when I was slogging through Popeye for the episode.
That'll do it.
Yeah, for the episode with Monty Ashley. And I was like, oh God almighty, what have I done? I've created a show where I have to sit through lots of bad movies and TV shows.
Lucky you. The Magic Hunter is one that I adore, which is this weird movie that was produced by David Bowie and among other people. He's just one of them, but it's like this weird, I don't even remember where it's from. Gosh, I'm trying to look it up because I can't remember.
Did you say The Magic Hunter?
Yeah, The Magic Hunter.
Magic Hunter, 1996, or same year.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have an entry on Wikipedia.
Nope.
Wow.
But it's a wonderful movie. It sort of does a Faust thing, and it's about a sharpshooter who makes a deal with the devil, and there's this recurring theme of this painting of the Virgin Mary that comes alive, and it's a beautiful, beautiful movie, and, that I only have on VHS.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've got a VCR.